from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT, and I'm going to talk about some strategic risk in a broader sense. And you're probably wondering why, with so much going on with Iran, would I be talking about Russia? Why is the focus on Russia? Well, I'm going to give you kind of a reality thing here. China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, what we sometimes refer to as CRINK on the international set, they are four, very close allies, mutually supportive, all of them very autocratic, authoritative governments, albeit with different motivations and ideologies for their beliefs. But nonetheless, what you'll find is they link together very closely, and Russia and Iran specifically have a very close relationship, a habitual relationship. So I'm going to kind of get into that. And I'm going to talk about how what we're seeing now is kind of a disheveling of Russia's post-Cold War status quo, certainly whatever they've been dealing with for the last quarter century, where its foreign entanglements, and I'm going to loop Ukraine as a foreign entanglement, have kind of undermined over time Putin's base, his domestic support. Now, in latter February, before the war with Iran, that big military Department of Defense or Department of War think tank called RAND Corporation wrote a very interesting assessment on Russia. One thing they mentioned was the reality that Ukraine is attacking military facilities and refineries around Russia. This is causing not just significant damage, but also producing shortages in things like gasoline, causing long lines for people to get gasoline in St. Petersburg and Russia, St. Petersburg and Moscow, Russia's two biggest cities, which takes it really home to the elite, if you will, the oligarchs of Russia when they can't get gas for their luxury cars. That's a real problem for them. All right. Furthermore, that along with huge expenditures in the military realm, primarily tied directly to what's happening in Ukraine, the military gets about 8% of the gross domestic product of Russia, which its economy is not that big. It's actually smaller than Italy's economy, that the sanctions are restricting the flow of long-term capital for the civilian economy. It's cutting out capital that's needed for other things. And so it's making the quality of life in Russia that much worse. It's making the ability of Russians to do business that much worse. And Russia's energy revenues dropped by about a fifth in 2025. So it's got huge problems. Fiscal problems are growing, and the country was on the verge of a serious recession. Now, the budget deficit is about 2.5% of the gross domestic product, which was about five times higher than what was predicted at the beginning of the year. So that tells you something about where they're going. And to raise revenue, they put on these value-added taxes or VATs that have been put in place, and a technological fee is being assessed on import electronics, household appliances. All of this puts tremendous strain on everyday Russians. Beyond the economy, there's evidence of the war's really negative long-term impacts on society. A lot of these recently freed violent felons or whatever prisoners were used as troops. They did their time in Ukraine, and for those that didn't die, they came back to Russian society, and you're putting hardened combat experienced thugs on the streets, and it's causing huge problems, not just in the major cities, but also in these small villages where these, hardcore anti-societal crooks, thugs, whatever you want to say, have now come to dominate the landscape. And of course, the Russian police forces, the Russian authorities simply are not what they need to be to counter this problem. So it's causing rising crime. With that, you're seeing rising public corruption, worsening the political repression. And all of this portends greater dislocation and strained societal cohesion under the Putin regime. So that's a long way of saying Russia's got some very serious problems. And then you add on to that the war with Iran. Iran has been not just their staunch ally, but also a source of drone components and for a while drones for Russia. Now, Russia has been very limited in what it can do to help Iran, although one of the things they've done is provide intelligence support. I'll get to that in a bit. Iran is really constrained from helping Russia. They are completely overwhelmed with what's happening to them. They can't do anything to assist Russia. They have this massive blockade now, the naval blockade. And one would say, well, the naval blockade doesn't go to the north. It doesn't hit the Caspian Sea. That's true, but you have this air traffic flying all over. They've hit drone plants, drone component facilities all over Iran. In other words, Iran doesn't really have much it can do. And there are reports that some of the drone manufacturing facilities that Russia has of Shahed drones in Russia, that they're running out of critical component parts that they need to keep that production up. And they're losing Shahed drones at a prodigious rate. And I saw some estimates that they are simply going to go, it's a reverse trend. They're simply running out of drones. And at some point, I mean, if it stayed the same and it was all equal, they'd run out of drones. But they're probably going to have to cut back on the drone strikes. And also, Ukraine has gotten very, very good at drone interceptors. In fact, they're selling drone interceptors to the Arab states to use in the war against Ukraine because of how the Ukrainian technology is so much better, so much advanced, and so much cheaper than anything else out there. Well, what we're seeing with Ukraine is they're taking out 90% of the drones with these strikes. Yes, some get through. Yes, there's some horrible stuff that happens, but they have become very adept at countering drones, and they become a global leader in how to do counter-drone warfare. So all of that is causing huge problems for Russia in terms of what it's doing. Now, while Russia manufactures a variant of the Shahed drones, it still needs components. I want to make that very clear. Russia's most important ally, China, is also facing enormous problems because with the U.S. naval blockade on Iranian ports, they can't get Iranian oil. They need oil. They import a tremendous amount of oil into China. They can't get it to the Persian Gulf. They can't get, or through the Strait of Hormuz from any country. They can't get it from Iran, and they've been buying, sanctioned, discounted Iranian oil, which the oil has been brought into China. It's well below the global rate, which means they're able to use that oil or that gas to produce things, which they sell at much lower prices than other countries can do it, simply because the cost of goods sold is so much less because of that discount oil. Well, now they're having a tough time doing that. Very difficult time. And they want to get more oil from Russia because they can also buy the Russian oil at a discount. But Ukraine's doing something to deeply constrain that. And that's deep strike, something I'm going to talk about in a bit. Russia's cost of goods sold advantage is being threatened. This is causing more slowdowns in China's economy. And China is starting to recognize that it too has limits to its power. In fact, I think they're getting a little bit of a reality check. Whether this accelerates their plans or decelerates their plans for Taiwan is yet to be seen, but they definitely recognize they have limitations there. Another thing for Putin is within Russia, the what they call mil bloggers. That's these military bloggers that have been so prevalent throughout the war. And at first were very, very pro-Putin, pro-war. Now they're very ultra-nationalist for the most part, but they're not always really thrilled with how the war is being prosecuted. Several of Russia's high-profile influencers have been really speaking out quite vigorously against the country's top officials. This is kind of a rare stream of criticism. And that still sought to steer clear of condemning or criticizing Russia's President Vladimir Putin directly, but it's criticizing those around Putin. And so it's undermining Putin's position. Victoria Banya, who's a Russian beauty influencer now living in Monaco, posted a very lengthy video on last week where she had talked about, she captioned an appeal to Putin, basically to all concerned Russians. She said the issues in the countries are being unaddressed. There was, flooding in southeastern Russia, environmental pollution, limited access to the internet. Of course, that's because of the clampdown that Putin put, because of all the criticism that his regime was getting on the on various different platforms. She said, look, it's like a coiled spring. The people are afraid of you. The artists are afraid. The governors are afraid. and basically saying, look, this coiled spring is going to release all this stuff. And what she's basically saying is that there could be a Russian revolt. She's giving voice to something that there's been more and more speculation on, that this could be something that could result in Russians going to the streets, much like they did in 1991, right? Her video was watched by more than 20 million times. It was liked over 1.4 million times. It attracted 75,000 comments. In other words, it got a lot of attention. And then on last Friday, the Kremlin was feeling so much pressure from this influencer campaign, they actually had to go out and formally deny that President Putin was insulated from all the bad news about the war and all the bad news after the celebrity blogger had accused unidentified top officials of not telling him the truth about what's going on around the country. And the fact that they had to publicly respond to it is probably the biggest indicator to me that there was something really significant going on there. Russian authorities have really clamped down on messaging apps, including WhatsApp and Telegram, and they're forcing Russian users of these platforms like Instagram to log in basically using VPNs, virtual private networks, in order to do anything at all. So here you have an advanced industrialized economy, or supposedly so, in the information age, and they're having to shut down all the tools of the information age because, frankly, the reality is that the Russian people are losing a lot of support, if they had a lot of support, for Putin. And we're starting to see some are losing their fear of Putin as well. Change of subject. Britain has pledged to send a record number of drones to Ukraine at the end of 2029. Zelensky has been talking about what's going on with their air defenses. They built a reliance on Patriot air defenses. They can't get Patriot missiles from the U.S. Secretary Hegseth came out and said, well, one of the problems with Patriot missiles is that we sent so many to Ukraine. Ukraine came back, they're basically saying, no, you never sent us those missiles. Basically, since Trump came to office, there really hasn't been a big flow of missiles going to Ukraine from what I can gather. It's always been very sporadic, and lately it had not much going to it. And Russia has warned Europe that its drone support for Ukraine is an escalation. It's crossing another red line. And Ukraine's attacks on Russian industrial facilities have been a feature of the war for years, but the effectiveness of the campaign is really causing enormous problems for Putin in the oil and gas area, and that's caused tremendous pressure on him. And so basically, there's a lot all happening at the same time. Now, Zelensky has said that some of the allied countries are facing higher fuel prices and have asked Ukraine to scale back on such attacks. The U.S. is reportedly one of the countries that did that. And of course, the U.S. Response to the war in Iran was to waive the sanctions on Russian oil. And that would hope, their thinking was, hopefully cause a lowering of the international price of oil. And then they quietly, about a week ago, let the sanctions, the waiver of sanctions, go away. And then when Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz yet again, one of the things the administration did was a wave the sanctions again on Russian oil. For Russia, this has been a significant source of income, obviously a significant source of consternation for Ukraine because it's funding the war against Ukraine. And Ukraine's response has been to make it physically difficult, if not impossible, for the Russians to put oil into tankers to send out around the world. And they've been doing that through kinetic means. And they've been hitting all sorts of things. They've been hitting up around the Baltic. They hit some refineries, some pumping areas down in Crimea. They've hit some oil facilities as well. And they've been hitting these oil facilities all over Russia, very strategically, taking out their ability to pump oil, to put gas in cars in Moscow, but also to sell oil around the world. And so even though the sanctions have been waived, the ability to fill up tankers and send them out of the Baltic is more difficult than ever. And so that's been a feature that we've seen with this. Also, the Russians are having trouble selling oil because of a variety of other things going on. For example, Ukraine attacked out of Libya. Ukraine attacked a Russian tanker in the Mediterranean. Now, of course, this caused some environmental concerns when this happened, but it does show the longer reach that Ukraine has. And now Ukraine is working very closely with a number of the Gulf states, helping them with their counter-drone capability. One only has to wonder if maybe those Gulf states will allow Ukrainian forces to do some things like their special operations forces, maybe in that region to counter any lingering Russian influence or Russian operations in that area. It's very interesting how this war is uncorking a lot of different things. And I don't think all this stuff is necessarily thrilling the White House with how this has gone. Ukraine's deep strikes have hit over 70 industrial targets in Russia, especially oil and gas, and they've become common. They're designed to make gas difficult to find in Russia, along with act as an incentive for countries to not let Russian shadow tankers into the waters or ports, particularly when they're willing to attack those tankers very far afield, like in the Mediterranean. Now, all of that's going on. One thing, Russia has more people than Ukraine. Hence, Russia has more troops than Ukraine. Russia's put a lot of troops into Ukraine and around Ukraine. And certainly in sheer numbers, Ukraine will never be able to match the Russian forces, you know, across the board, man for man, so to speak. However, Ukraine did something this last week, which is kind of a change in military warfare. It actually captured a Russian position using only unmanned ground robots and drones. They actually had Russian infantry surrendering to these robots. President Zelensky came out and cited this. It says the first time in wartime anywhere, and that no Ukrainian infantry were involved. He said the robots in general have done over 22,000 missions in 3 months in that war. And many of these missions were pulling wounded soldiers and transporting them back rather than risking human beings transporting back wounded soldiers through a battle zone. They would send these robot unmanned ground vehicles, and they put the wounded soldiers on those, and they would bring them back. And that, of course, has been saving lives in a variety of different ways. The result of this is that they're looking at this robotic drone type of assault formation, which the Russians haven't been able to match in terms of what they're doing, and maybe using that as a force that could bore through Russian lines and potentially achieve a breakout, and that would be very substantial. Also, the arsenal has changed in the face of this war, and sparked the way that's being done with unmanned ground robots and drones has caused interest, in some cases bordering on panic, within NATO and the U.S. and other Western forces in realizing that the warfare has changed, the type of tools that we need to fight the war has changed so dramatically, so quickly, that we're way behind where we need to be. Drone technology has become vital to Ukraine's fight against Russian invasion, and he says that drones are really responsible for about 90% of Russia's frontline losses. So it's not an insubstantial thing that Russia is dealing with the drones. Not to say Russia doesn't have drones. In fact, actually, Russia had a little bit of an advantage operationally, that they were the first ones to adopt fiber optic lines to fly their drones, and with their first person view drones. And with that, they were able to basically neutralize a lot of the electronic warfare jamming that had been taking place and causing the Ukrainians to have to quickly catch up with this new advanced way of controlling drones without suffering the EW effects that they had been doing. All right. So that's pretty big. Another thing is that a lot of reservists that have been mobilized, being sent to the front, are complaining that they had minimal support. And there's talk about Russia is suffering from a huge shortage of trained soldiers. One captured soldier, reserve soldier, said he had about 12 days of training before he was deployed. So basically, they're using these reserves as essentially cannon fodder, giving them very little training, almost no additional training, and that's just sending them right into the battle. And of course, they're getting slaughtered at a prodigious rate. The total number of Russians that have been killed or wounded since the war began has gone over 1.3 million. It's estimated to be about at least five times greater than what the Ukrainians are suffering. And that's because of bad leadership, bad equipment, bad maintenance, bad tactics, bad everything with the Russians. And I'm not saying that Ukrainians are perfect, but the Ukrainians have been very adaptive. They have been learning as they go along. They are really at the forefront of the modern battlefield, particularly in use of unmanned ground vehicles, drones. And so they've been very, very effective in that regard. Sanctions, high inflation. I think it's a 17% rate that Russia's central bank has determined. All this is affecting Russia's ability to grow its economy, which may this year grow maybe by 0.6% compared to what they claimed was 4% last year. I actually think their economy is going the other direction, but that's the official figures are out there. The cost of war is estimated at $150 billion, and this is consuming pretty much most or all of the income that's coming from oil and gas that Russia gets. Putin is continuing this information campaign saying that Russian forces can force Ukraine to surrender through pressure on the battlefield. And however, all intelligence assessments say the other thing. In fact, a number of top experts have said there really is no way that Russia can win this war militarily, that Russia's ability to move forward on the battlefield has pretty much ended, that they are not making much forward movement at all. And the only significant change of terrain on the battlefield is really the Ukrainians regaining terrain out there. So their equipment losses, manpower losses are well exceeding their territorial gains. Their tanks have been increasingly destroyed or mobilized by Ukrainian artillery and drones. Even when Russian troops, or even if Russian troops, make small advances, the current strategy, which is incurring phenomenal losses of troops and equipment, just cannot be maintained. And resources are being depleted far faster than any success in the battlefield can justify. Now, Kyiv has begun large-scale production of drones. They have a planned output of at least 3 million drones per year and are preparing to introduce, well, they have actually introduced the Flamingo rockets, those cruise missiles, which are very similar to missiles that we have, and they have had some pretty spectacular success with them. And so, in long story short, for Russia, this has become a war where they're running out of time. And Iran really may have tipped things in a significant way for Russia that they did not anticipate. It cut off one of the few outside sources of support that they had. It cut off key components they need for their drones. Without their ability to put those Shahed drones and do these waves of drone attacks on Ukraine, they start running out of things they can do to really influence the war, to put pressure on the Ukrainians. And the Ukrainians are putting so many, with these UGVs, these unmanned ground vehicles, and this phenomenal production of drones across the board and these long-range strikes, Russia is just hitting a point where they can't maintain what's going on. And obviously, the peace talks have gone nowhere. I don't see the U.S. doing anything other than basically telling Ukraine, give up terrain or surrender to the Russians. And that doesn't seem to be anything that's going to achieve any results. So with that, I would say that Russia's got a real conundrum. I would say they have a huge problem, and they're getting a major reality check. In fact, I think we're on the road to Russian ruination if they keep doing what they're doing. Hey, thanks for listening to Strat. Thanks for those who turn to Hal Kempfer TV on YouTube. And of course, you can go to stratpodcast.com. And I hope you listen or watch and listen to the next Strat podcast. Thanks.